It was after this event coming back to my house where I got flaked on, you know, so someone chose to go hang out with the guys, where it was almost like a movie flash before my eyes, just all these different factors coming in, and like the shame and the embarrassment and the, again, this communication that was so impossible. And there were some other factors that I'd been ignoring to a certain extent, some financial things that had been occurring that just had been happening. So it's like a lot of different things imploding. And it was after that event at my house with just my mom and the kids where I just broke down in tears. I'm like, it's all crashing down. I'm starting to see things for what they are, and I can't paint them to look different. I can no longer ignore them. They're right in my face, and the brick wall is crashing on me, and it's crashing hard. So this particular event might look like, oh, a little, you know, a preschool graduation, but it was everything at once. And I think it was the final crux, I think, was just this deep shame and embarrassment.
My guest for this episode is Kate Walker. She's a businesswoman, an author, a parent. She's really navigated some significant life shifts to become the person that she is today. Her journey is one of transformation and resilience. It's of facing challenges headfirst, making tough decisions, and all have ultimately led her to a life of personal and professional fulfillment. In our conversation, Kate opens up about the dichotomy of her life, where her professional life was thriving while her personal relationships were full of struggles. She shares about her decision to end her marriage, a choice that demanded a great deal of strength, resilience, and especially self-awareness. Her story underscores the power of making tough decisions for personal happiness and well-being. I love the connection from the Life Shifts goal of these candid conversations and the fact that Kate's new book is titled A Candid Conversation, Lessons in Life, Love, and Leadership. Before we get into this conversation with Kate Walker, I wanted to thank all the Patreon supporters. As a solo podcaster, any support is greatly appreciated. And if you're interested in directly supporting the show, please check out patreon.com/thelifeshiftpodcast, and you can learn all about the tiers that are there. So without further ado, here's my candid conversation with Kate Walker.
I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Life Shift podcast. I am here with Kate. Hey, Kate.
Hi. Hi, Matt.
Thank you for joining me all the way on the other side of the country.
I'm here in sunny Bay Area, California. Yes.
Well, thank you for being a part of the Life Shift podcast. We were chatting a little bit before recording that, you know, I'm over 100 episodes now. And I don't know if you know, but this podcast started as a class assignment in a master's degree program. I got a second master's degree during the pandemic because I was kind of bored and I wanted to like reactivate my brain a little bit. And I just took a random class that was about podcasting, and it was an assignment. And here we are, like 2 years later.
Here we are. That's amazing. Congratulations.
And what I love is that everyone's story is so different and lots of different experiences. But what I'm seeing is how much we all have in common compared to how many differences we're like told that we have or things that we fight against. And so I know that your story will have areas that resonate with a lot of people. So I appreciate you bringing yourself here to tell us this story.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. And congratulations, by the way, at this time of the recording, you just released a book about 2 weeks ago. So congratulations.
I did. It's out in the world, which is scary and crazy and exciting, all the things. So yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
And tell us the name of it.
The book is called A Candid Conversation. And I have the feeling you and I are going to have a candid conversation here today, but it's called A Candid Conversation, Lessons in Life, Love, and Leadership.
I love that. I loved it when, you know, you had someone reach out about you being on the show. And when I saw the name of your book, I was like, well, that's part of the tagline of my show. And it's basically candid conversations.
I know. I'm excited to be here to have the candid conversation.
I think it's so important too. And I think what I love about this journey on the podcast and having these conversations is I don't do what they tell you to do. They tell you to research everyone, come up with these questions, have everything like that. And what I found, the more that I lean into just being present, the more valuable the conversations become for myself, but also the more I hear from people behind the scenes that have listened to episodes and saying, oh my gosh, when your guest said this, or when you asked the guest this particular question, it's just so valuable to just be present and go where the conversation needs to go.
Yeah, I agree. It just adds a little bit of authenticity to it and just a curiosity, an authentic curiosity. I think that's what I call it. So I like it. So I'm glad there's little research. Thank you for not researching me.
No offense. I think, you know, just about your book title, the words leadership and candid conversations seem like opposing in my mind based on the experiences that I've had in my own professional journey and kind of the things that I had to unteach myself through this podcasting journey. And I also, I talk about like this active listening component a lot and how in the before podcast days, I would go to meetings or something like that. And it would always be me waiting for the next silence to say like the next most profound thing or like bring up a question that nobody had ever thought of before. Whereas now I'm like, I'll think of that. And if I forget it by the time there's silence,
yes,
it's okay.
Yes, yes. Keep it natural. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Keep it natural. Keep it going. Yes, I agree.
Awesome. Well, you know, let's get into your story, but I think it'll be helpful to just maybe if you could tell us a little bit without giving away too much, like who you are now and like what you do now, and then we'll have you paint the picture of what life was like before this moment that we're going to talk about today.
Yes. Wow. What I do now. I feel like it's changing by the day. What I do now, my goodness. I mean, I've been a parent for a long time. I have a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old. So that's a big part of my story. And I share many stories in the book. So that will be ongoing forever. Being a parent, I'm also a businesswoman. I quit corporate back in April 2021 to start my own business. So I'm a solopreneur, entrepreneur, doing my own business. At this point, I'm an author. The book, it's out now. It actually did hit Amazon bestseller status. So that's awesome. A little nuts. Yeah. So I'm doing so many different things. And I feel like I'm in a place of life where I just feel pretty good. I feel more and more settled in. Of course, we all have the things that we're working through, myself included, but just feeling like some decisions I've made leading up to this point were the right decisions. I mean, I know I'm a work in progress, but I feel like, yeah, many pivot points, many decision points have led me to where I am today. And some of these decisions were not easy. Yeah, it took a lot of courage and being brave on myself, you know, being brave to do certain things, but have led me to where I am today. And I feel pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about it like, I mean, you can see the light in your face when you
talk about where you
are. We'll find out where you were in just a minute.
But there was not as much light at previous times.
You can see, you know what I see, like, I think it's confidence that I see in like, yeah, like I did that and I'm doing that and it feels good and rewarding in a way. So really interested if you could kind of paint the picture of what your life was like leading up to this shift that you kind of we've identified in a conversation before this of how your life turned into what it is now.
Yes. And I write in much more detail in the book. So I know we'll just catch just a little bit of it, but I grew up in Sacramento, California, and I guess in hindsight, I was just kind of a geek, kind of a dorky girl, really trying to fit in and be popular. And that didn't quite really line up for me, but of course, lessons learned. And I went away to college in San Diego, and that's where I really started to find more confidence in myself and confidence in building a career or starting to think about what that would look like. And for me, throughout my life so far, I really have felt like career has been a really enjoyable container for me and has been a place of meeting great people and having great opportunities and learning so much. And that's been, interestingly, just a very safe, compartmentalized space for me, career. These are happy places for me. And in relationships, those were friendships and even family dynamics and romantic relationships. I'm not quite sure why. I mean, I'm still learning as I go, but those were more challenging spots for me. And in the book, I write about a relationship I got into in my early 20s where I met someone and began to date this person and ignored yellow flags and red flags for a lot of different reasons, and then went on to marry this person. And that, yeah, that was a really, that those were, I mean, many, many bright times in that relationship, but also, unfortunately, many dark times where I had to do a lot of reflection about what I was doing and what I wanted to do and why am I doing, and just beating yourself up and overanalyzing and thinking and stressing and all just so much going on. I'll give away the plot a little bit. It's a relationship that eventually doesn't end up, it ends up dissolving. So yeah, I talk about that. I also talk about the decision to how to end it, which was the most difficult decision I've ever made in my life, was that, because at that point in time, there were children in the mix. And how do you go and destroy a family? So that's, these are conversations in my head. How am I going to destroy a family? Am I going to ruin two people's lives? Like, that feels horrible. So these were really, really intense decisions as part of my story. But again, interesting. Career was having a joyful time, but relationships, my God, why is this so hard?
What was your childhood like? Did you have like a normal, I don't know what normal means. Did like a, were your parents together? Did you have like this nice family life at
home?
Well,
you know,
up?
on in some ways, yes. I was actually, and I talk about this in the book too, I was introduced to a swim and tennis club when I was quite young. And that, just talk about a confidence builder. I learned how to be competitive on a tennis court. I learned how to be a really excellent swimmer. There were all kinds of activities available and social activities. So that was another part of it. So that was a real bright spot. My home life could be a little bit challenging just because my parents were, seemed to be arguing a lot and trying to navigate just some difficult, you know, just dealing with difficulty of parents arguing, that sort of thing. But one thing that in hindsight, years later, I did realize is that something that I learned and something that I picked up is that my mom, you know, she potentially could have left my dad, but she chose to stay. But what I picked up was, the messages I picked up were, you stay, you hang in there, you be a team member, you're loyal. So those are, that was a message that became deeply ingrained in me through friendships in life or all different kinds of relationships, or I'm very, very loyal and to a fault, where I just stay and I stick it out because I'm a good friend, I'm loyal, I'm a good team member, even when all the signs are blaring that the relationship may have run its course or may not be the right thing for now. So that's one thing that I've learned from my childhood was you know, just that deep loyalty that you just stay.
Yeah, I think there's also like, I think there's people that see homes that are like, I don't know, not as stable as we want them to be, or there's fighting, or there's things that feel uncomfortable. And then we as kids kind of assume this like, well, that's not going to be me. So let me just show everyone on the outside that everything's nice.
Yes.
And I'll just deal with the stuff on the inside.
That's right.
And I can't show anyone else that I also failed.
Yeah.
So like, why would I get divorced, or why would I break up, or why would I do anything? You know, to me, your story, like, it makes sense why work was so wonderful too, because it, like you said, it's compartmentalized, but also there's like, you can prove yourself there very easily.
Yes.
It's all like, there are ways, there are check marks, there are, you know, there's assumed milestones, there's things that you can like measure against.
Yes. Yeah.
It feels like, for me, very like, I was the same way. My parents divorced when I was like 5 or 6, and then my mom was killed in an accident when I was eight. And so I had to move with my dad, who was not the primary parent. He was thousands of miles away. And a lot of what I assumed at that, as that kid, and the responsibilities that I assumed for myself were, I have to be perfect. I have to do everything right.
That's right.
Or my dad is going to abandon me too. So it's a little different, but I can also see how, like, you, I'm not going to be them, is kind of a feeling that someone like in your situation could possibly assume. Does that resonate?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, it is. And I don't, I mean, I guess one thing that came out of that was I'm not going to be them in the sense that, you know, I run a very drama-free household. Like, we're not going to have any drama. It's if the milk gets spilled, it's okay. If the glass breaks, it's all right. Those things weren't all right in my childhood home. There was just like such like drama if anything like that were to occur. So I do have learnings and takeaways like that. But really, I haven't analyzed my family life, my youth, until I started writing this book. Because I'm like, well, as I started writing some of it, why did I make the decisions I made? Where does this come from? And you have to sometimes, if you're willing, go back in time and explore some of those things, which can be painful or embarrassing. I mean, I painted a shiny picture about my family life. It's great. And they were painting a shiny picture and everything's great. And it wasn't until again writing the book, I'm like, you know, I think it's time to just bring forward the things that impacted me. And I'm not speaking ill of anyone in particular. I'm talking through the lens of my five senses, what I saw, what I heard, what I experienced. So just my experience and how it shaped my personality.
Were you accomplishment driven?
Yes.
Okay. So yes. It was like a proof point, like you, something inside, maybe subconscious, was like, I need to do the next thing.
Oh, yeah.
So that everyone can see that I'm okay.
Oh, yes. And there was a lot of positivity in the household if I was winning something. So as a competitive tennis player, when I was winning, the household was light and it was fun and we were joyful.
Oh, that's a lot of responsibility.
It is. But then if you're losing, it's like, what is wrong? You're not practicing enough. So those are things that became ingrained from me. Like, I like winning. That's the way to go. Like, we win and then it's just like easy and light. It's an easy and light environment if we win.
That may make sense to me. I talked to a lot of people about this like checklist life of like, you just do the next thing and everyone, you know, like that's the approval that you're seeking. And then the next thing doesn't bring the exact approval that you were hoping for. So like, oh, maybe it's the next one. Maybe it's the next one after that.
It is. In hindsight, it's dysfunctional or there's some irregularity to it. But
I think it's common. I think it is too.
Yeah. Yes.
I think it's more common of times gone by than it is as much now.
Potentially,
I think people are
yes.
a little bit, you know, I'm sure there is still that, but I feel like, you know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s and I feel like everything was like swept under the rug and like you only talk about the good things. You only talk about
yes.
the successes.
Yes.
Everything that's bad is like behind, we close the door first
then
we talk about
it. That's right. Yeah. Yes.
So as you were going through this relationship, did you see these signs before you got married? Did you see these signs before you had kids? When you had kids, was this like a, I'm going to fix this someday or I'm just going to ride it out?
Yeah, so many different feelings and thoughts. I mean, this was a person that I grew to be best friends with. Of course, you know, when you're spending this much time together, you're a committed couple, you become best friends. And yes, there were flags, but it's also like, well, this is my best friend and I'm very loyal and I'm a team player. And we just like, the other thing too is marriage being a kind of a fantasy. It didn't seem like a fantasy back then, but it was a fantasy. All my friends are getting married and they're having these fabulous weddings. And I felt like I was a little behind, you know, kind of last in line. So really wanting to have that achievement, that's an achievement too. That's a checkbox. So ignoring some things that maybe should not have been ignored. And there was a breakup. And I talk about this in the book as well. There was a breakup that really did feel like the final, like this is it. This is really it. And it felt like it was really it. And then September 11 happened, and which felt like the end of the world. It felt like everything is what's happening. Where's the stability? So at that point, we came back together to talk about life and, you know, and fell back into, you know, the friendship and the love. And it's like, gosh, maybe we should do this because we've been together a long time. We have the history. So we decided to move forward to marriage from after September 11th. Thought that was, you know, maybe a sign that we should be together when, and I write about this in the book too, maybe we should have gone to counseling, but that did not occur. It became a little bit more of getting back into the fantasy of, you know, let's come back together and gosh, let's not wait another minute. Let's go get married.
Do you feel like you were convincing yourself at any point?
Sure.
Or were you, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you were kind of fighting yourself as well. Like,
definitely.
I mean,
when there's, there's different red flags. I mean, and there's a lot of, you know, well, I'm going to change. Oh, I'm going to change too. I'm going to adjust this. Oh, I'm going to adjust this to fantasy. And when things were, and I again, talk about this in the book, but your inner knowing knows. Your inner knowing knows that something is wrong, something is off, something is not meant to be. So it's really this fight, and I guess you call it ego, wanting the now, wanting the satisfaction right now, and then the deeper intuition saying, I don't know that this is really it. But again, that kind of the fantasy, like, well, I want the fantasy. So let's get in that lane. Let's get in the fantasy lane. So yeah, there were definitely signs.
And do you think those decisions were for yourself or for the perception of you
both.
That others had?
Both. Okay. Yeah, both.
Because I could see how, you know, like the things you were talking about growing up and those kind of things, it's like, well, other people also need to see that you're in this quote unquote happy relationship or, yeah, they need to see the proof.
Definitely, definitely. What, and what better proof than getting married? I mean, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, and I can imagine too, I've had moments in which I felt like, oh, well, I do kind of feel like I'm failing at something. And then I like convince myself that I'm not in some kind of way to like, to circumnavigate that
definitely.
Pain.
Yeah, definitely. I think these are natural human behaviors. And unless we take the time to really go deep and think about it, which I wasn't, I was seeing therapists before, I think before September 11, really trying to analyze it. And it was maybe by way of some of those conversations that led me to say, there are red flags here. Maybe we need to go in a different direction. And then, you know, the other life circumstances happen. So it's, you know, it's tough being human. All kinds of emotions are happening.
Well, and we were also sold growing up, and I hope people aren't sold this now, but that marriage was like a successful check mark, like married and like till you die, that's all you can do. That's your only option. You can't, you know, like you can't be an old maid, you can't be divorced, you can't be, you know, like it was all these things that we were sold. And it's like, but people change. Like people change.
They do. They do.
You know, I mean, it's just, it, as a human, like you said, it's tough being a human and the responsibilities that we kind of absorb or take
absolutely.
On ourselves.
Yes. Yes. And like you talk about those check boxes and the check marks, like, well, I've got to do this to be perceived in the right ways. I've got to do this to be perceived in the right way. And it, yeah, it's, it, it can be a trap.
So how did this relationship kind of build to its like volcano like moment? Was there like, yeah.
Having two young children, I mean, and I love my children to pieces. It's especially when they're young. Those are hard years, really hard years, caretaking and nurturing and loving and trying to find the right preschool and all these different things. And while all that was going on, we were also in the process of we were living in San Francisco at the time and in a flat that was served so many beautiful purposes for about a decade. And then it's like, okay, this is getting too small. So in the process of trying to move and find a better place. And ended up in a fixer-upper of all challenging things to be a part of. So the fixer-upper, I think, was a real, real challenging time with having young children and trying to live in this place while a remodel was happening and the money getting sucked out to go toward all the things. It was just a really, really difficult time. And I mean, then I think priorities started shifting as far I was the caretaker and a money maker. And then, you know, that we have someone over here that's in charge of a home reconstruction. It just became fragmented, I guess might be the best way to put it. A lot of fragments and difficulty. I'll never maybe crack this code, but a lot of difficulty in communication, difficulty. I write about this in the book, difficulty that just didn't even make sense to me. Where I couldn't even figure out like what it was. And maybe it's like, is this just like a sabotage? Like what's happening? So there were a lot of things that I can take responsibility. Yeah, I could take responsibility for my parts, but then also things coming at me that I couldn't make sense of. And no matter how I tried and all those things, I'm like, this is just like something is not adding up. So it just becomes strained and strained and strained and just becomes more and more difficult.
Well, meanwhile, you're trying to, on the outside, look like a good mom.
Yes.
Look like a good wife, look like a professional in yeah. whatever field you were living in. No pressure on you at all. Yeah.
No pressure. Right. Exactly. No pressure. Yeah. And it is, those were probably the most pressure packed days. I mean, in years after that, of raising young children and trying to be a single being a single parent and making the money, raising the kids. Yeah. So it's, those are some challenging days.
So what was this moment that you knew, okay, like he's either sabotaging this, there's communication problems, this house is a money pit, I'm sure. I'm picturing the movie.
Oh, yes.
The Money Pit.
Yes.
What was the moment that kind of brought you to be like, wait a second, this isn't the life that I want to live?
Yeah, there were so many factors and I'm just trying to keep it going day to day. And there was an event where there was, for my second son, there was a preschool graduation, which seemed so light and breezy, a preschool graduation. And this preschool graduation was on a May day, sunny, gorgeous morning, and all the happy faces of the children. And there was a plan for how the family would come together on that day, including some grandparents coming down to help celebrate. So I had in my mind how this day would unfold for a little while at least. And the day, just someone showing up late, someone trying to leave early. I write about this in the book. It was my mom who was down for the day. And the plan after this event didn't go as planned. And it just led to misunderstandings and embarrassment. And that was it, that it was after this event, coming back to my house where I got flaked on, you know, so someone chose to go hang out with the guys, where it was almost like a movie flashed before my eyes, just all these different factors coming in, and like the shame and the embarrassment and this communication that was so impossible. And there were some other factors that I'd been ignoring to a certain extent, some financial things that had been occurring that just had been happening. So it's like a lot of different things imploding. And it was after that event at my house with just my mom and the kids where I just broke down in tears. I'm like, it's all crashing down. I'm starting to see things for what they are, and I can't paint them to look different. I can no longer ignore them. They're right in my face, and the brick wall is crashing on me, and it's crashing hard. So this particular event might look like, oh, a little, you know, a preschool graduation, but it was everything at once. And I think it was the final crux, I think, was just this deep shame and embarrassment of like kind of being ditched after this thing, and just a lot of shame and realizations that I thought, you know, It's decision time.
And the shame came from your mother seeing that we're saying this other person, your husband, or at the time your husband, did not go, or he just didn't participate in all the events?
Yeah. So it was supposed to be a family morning. And I'll just share, you know, he arrives late and didn't seem to really want to be there, and then was trying to leave early. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, we've got the thing back at the house. It's like, well, I've got a tea time, you know, I got to go. And then it leads to picking a fight with me. So prompting anger and disappointment in me. It's like, well, how easy is it to ditch someone who's upset and angry? Well, gosh, you know, that gives a good excuse to go do something else. So just pushing my buttons to upset me. And we just talked about painting shiny pictures of, you know, what might be happening, but really behind the closed door, something else is happening. So I guess my mom came behind the closed doors. It's like, hey, this is what happened today, but here's some other things that I've been just hiding and not really willing to talk about. And today I am willing to talk about it. And today I'm willing to talk about what needs to happen next.
So do you think it's because your mom was there? Do you think if your mom wasn't there, like if it was just you were going to go home with your kids and your husband was supposed to go, but he decided to probably do what he's done before, do you think it would have been different if she wasn't there?
That's a great question. And as I sit here thinking about it, I think that maybe her presence was divine intervention, for lack of a better word. That's kind of what's coming in. But her being there did allow me to verbalize, vocalize. And I do think sometimes in raising small children and being just so busy that we can internalize a lot, hold it in. And I'm definitely that feels comfortable for me, holding things in. So I think her being there probably was a release of saying these things out loud. So yeah, that's a great question.
You also couldn't hide it.
I couldn't hide it. It was right there. And you know, the other thing too was if something like this had happened to me previously, it's like, okay, oops, yeah, that's all right. It's like, no, we're not going to play that anymore. I'm not covering for someone's behavior anymore. That's done.
Before that, did your mother ever see any of these cracks in your existence of these kind of things? Like after you moved out of the house or whatever, after you were a kid, did she ever see any of these?
In this breaks? Relationship?
In anything that you had done, like outside of the house, like you made a mistake, she saw it. Was this like the first time that something looked like, oh, you aren't handling this?
Yeah, that's a good question too. I think that they'd been used to, because like I explained earlier, I was a little bit programmed on achievement. Achievement feels good and we like achievement. We get accolades for achievement. So I like to be in the achievement lane so that things, you know, I looked good and things were going well. I was getting the achievements, checking the boxes. So this was definitely, I would say, the event, the thing where she saw me in not achievement mode, but where that things were really unraveling. So I think that the magnitude of it was not something she'd seen with me before, because generally things are like going okay, you know,
covered it up enough.
Or I covered it up okay. Enough. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting how certain things could happen before and they, you know, things just go on as normal, but then you add another figure or another component to it. And it's just like the perfect confluence of events that kind of allow you the beauty of seeing what's really happening and really breaking and understanding that all of it is okay and all of it can be something that you can work towards, but you have to be honest with it and you have to like set it all out here and be
yes. Like
not as perfect as I maybe made it, but you
absolutely.
Know what? It's mine.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing too is it can be hard to feel like a failure, especially if you feel like an achiever. It's like,
but you're not.
And that's the beauty of getting a little older and wiser, is that it's like, wait a minute, I'm not a failure. That wasn't a failure. So let's just ditch that limited thinking and self-sabotaging thinking. So yeah, but it can be hard when you don't like to fail. And then something of this magnitude, it can really kind of knock you down. And it takes a while to wrap your mind around that it's okay and you're going to be okay.
Well, and I like how you kind of describe that this, you know, this preschool graduation might seem to other people like, you know, like this little thing, like it's not, it's big, you know, it's something that you were probably looking forward to. It was probably something, it was an achievement. It was an accomplishment that your child had graduated from, you know, like there is still that little element of a checklist of a see what's happening, but also the opportunity to show everyone around you that, look, my family's coming together. We're celebrating as everything's good. And it turns out that it was like actually even better, because even though it was a big mess for you and it was a big, like it did something for you.
It was a turning point that you needed. Absolutely. It was the oddly, strangely, weirdly, it was the biggest turning point
And you're like, yeah, preschool graduation, but you know,
I know
you should be, everyone should be so lucky to have these moments in which they're like an awakening kind of a moment.
That's a great way to put it. It was an awakening. And it can feel like, again, it was messy and all that. And it's not until you get a little further down the road where you can look back and say, oh, okay, all right, yeah.
How far down the road did it take for you to look back at that moment in kind of like this, like, wow, I'm kind of glad that happened. Not the specific circumstances, but I'm glad that I was, my eyes were opened at that moment.
Really getting all the way through it took years. I would say, I mean, unfortunately, sadly, when the decision was, mutual decision was made to dissolve the marriage, and I got a little bit down the road, it did feel like a relief because the tension had become so difficult, so challenging on a day-to-day basis. So when I left that environment, it's like, oh my goodness, like I have a chance to just catch my breath. So that it just, it's a long, I'm definitely not one to turn on a dime. I process things. It takes me a while, takes me a while to wrap my mind around something or to get over something. So it took a long while. And it was, I pulled this out of my memory when writing the book just to talk about a situation. But until I was talking with you, it's like, what was the kind of pivot point to make that decision? It was this event that really was it.
After you had that moment with your mom, or those moments with your mom, and you had that, did you feel any kind of, was there any bit of relief? Because I know there's probably super overwhelming of all the things that now you need to do and deal with, but was there any lightness? Was there anything that felt that way?
Yes, for sure. Because I think also that looping in difficulty and looping in despair and looping in, what am I going to do? And it just, the sadness, like spiraling in that sadness, it's a really difficult place to live on a daily basis. And of course your kids are lifting you up, and there are absolutely moments of joy, but it just was such a deep sadness. And that's really probably not good for the mind, body, and soul, all the parts to live in a place like that. So yes, once that event had happened and I had the realizations, then I believe that was almost like a key unlocking, saying, okay, it's decision. You know the decision. We don't have to loop in despair and just loop and loop and loop. We know. And now we take some hard steps. So a relief followed by, okay, now we take hard steps. But yes, for sure, a relief.
Well, and the fact that you were always so comfortable in a work setting, did that help? Because you knew the steps, like you knew, like, okay, let me make my list and let's go.
I think that's very helpful. Having those skills, kind of the get stuff done skills, the checklist skills, the researching skills. You got to pick up the phone. You got to look. You got to go online. You got to do the things.
Did that give you confidence?
I think it did. I think it did. Yes. Yes. And I know that there are many people out there that it feels very overwhelming when you might reach a conclusion like that. And even for me, even though I had some administrative capabilities and skills to get these things done one step at a time, it's just one step at a time. One of my next steps was A, filing for divorce. So trying to find the right person to do that with. And then B, where do I go next? So just trying to get through those two next steps was my to-do list, which felt quite monumental, but just one small step at a time to move it forward to finding that peace. And I came to realize, and I write about this in the book too, I came to realize, well, what am I looking for? What do I want? I want peace.
Oh, yeah. So you were fighting.
Yeah. My next steps were, this feels hard, but I know it's moving me toward peace, finding peace.
Yeah, because it sounds like, you know, your life, maybe not every day, but you were waking up in a constant fight, whether that was against yourself to like convince yourself that everything was okay, or like literally just like fighting the circumstances
Definitely.
That were around you. Yeah, it's exhausting.
Yeah, fighting reality and fighting, like I talked about earlier, fighting what happens to the children. That was the biggest fight. Like, what does this look like? That was a really hard one, a really deep one to contemplate. Yeah.
You know, I have some friends that started a divorce registry.
Oh.
And essentially it celebrates people that have to make these big decisions.
Oh, wow.
You know, because making the choice to get a divorce is a big decision. But it doesn't mean you're a failure. It doesn't mean it's a big decision, and people should be celebrated for making really hard decisions. And so they started this registry because people have to start over. People have to do things. And, you know, like, we have bridal registries and all these things, but why don't we help people when they're making these other big decisions? So
I love that. I think that that's a beautiful service. I hope you drop that in the show notes. Yeah. Okay, good.
They have experts that, like, a group of experts that if someone going through whatever big life-changing moment, you know, started with divorce, but all sorts of life-changing moments, and, you know, people need help. Like, you needed to know who to go to for the divorce paperwork.
Absolutely. And, yeah. Absolutely. The divorce, the marriage process is fun and fantasy and all those things, and everybody coming out to celebrate and celebrate you and all that. The divorce process is quite lonely. Quite lonely.
Only because society, we've, like, made divorce like this taboo thing.
Yes.
And it's just, it shouldn't be. It's just another contract ending in some capacity, you know?
That's a beautiful way to put it. It is.
We attach so much to it. And I don't know. I was a product of, oh, not a product, but my parents were divorced and I was fine. You know, I mean, I was fine until my mom died and things were crazy, but I'm still fine. You know, like, I still survive that. And I think so many people, probably yourself, you were just, like, worried about the kids, but as long as there's still that love and the care and the parents are caring for them, I think the kids, they don't need to see their parents, you know, like, it doesn't need to be in this particular way that we're painting this picture. And so good on you for making that decision in that moment when it was so hard. Was there a time after that where you kind of noticed yourself feeling different? Not the actions, not the things, but, like, you felt, like, lighter?
Yes,
or
yes. I was going to say spring in my step. Yes. Yes. It took me a little while. It's interesting. I bought a doormat after we parted ways, and I don't even know where I got this doormat, maybe Target, but the doormat said peace. And yeah, I put the doormat out and it said peace, and that was fine. And maybe even a year later, I looked down at the doormat. I was like, oh, I am experiencing peace. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to be okay. So, like I said, I can't turn on a dime. It takes me a while to move through things, but there can be realizations where it's like,
it was probably a foreign feeling.
Today. Yes. Yes. Just the quiet of it, just the peace of my days was palpable. Yeah.
Because you could make decisions for yourself that were of value and not of protection.
Yes. Yes.
And not in a physical sense. I'm just saying, like, protection of, like, whatever was happening. You know, it sounds like you were able to, like, move through life with things you wanted to do?
Yes, absolutely. And I've really tried to employ, for lack of a better word, in coming out of childhood and all that, a real drama-free home. I mentioned that earlier, but that's so important to me, that it's very low-key, the emotions are, I mean, we all have our moments, but just everything is just taking the temperature down. We're going to take the temperature down. And again, if the glass breaks or the milk spills or the thing, whatever, we're going to be okay. So that was something that I very intentionally brought into my household, was we're going to run this in a very different way. And it's going to feel very, very good and very calm.
Was that hard to do to start with?
Probably so.
Feels so counterintuitive for me. Like, oh, wait, that doesn't matter. Like, I feel like I'm convincing myself. But good on you, and good for teaching your kids this as well, that, you know, spilled milk is really not anything to cry over.
It really, spilled milk, and when I was a kid, it was a very, very big deal. Very big deal. And then you get into greater, bigger things like a glass breaking. I read about in the book, we had this garbage disposal, and when you peel potatoes, the garbage disposal would just, I don't know, something would happen to it. It would break down and, like, water is flying everywhere and all this thing, and then all chaos. I mean, if that, you just never wanted the garbage disposal to break down, because it would be a hard like week maybe or longer. And, you know, it just, those things, I just can't let things like that bother me. I have to really take it all in stride and really measure, like, is this really a big deal or not?
Well, I mean, we look back at those moments and it wasn't ever really about the broken glass.
That's right.
It wasn't ever about the garbage disposal.
That's right.
It was whatever your parents happened to be harboring from, you know, and I think it's wonderful though, that you have the wherewithal now to look back on these moments and decide for yourself how you're going to move forward. And then your kids, by nature of what you're doing, are absorbing that as well. So it's not a reactive. It's
yes.
just kind of like, this is just how it is and how it should be.
That's right.
And so they can, you know, they can make those decisions.
Yeah. And to your point, these are now choices. And sometimes when you're in a living situation, some different kinds, or there may not be as many choices. I'm not saying you have to go get divorced to have choices, but but you can have choices no matter the situation. I believe that you need to determine, what are the choices that make me feel good? What are the choices that make me feel peaceful? What are the choices that make me feel supported? And then working to get there, whether that means you can make your own adjustment internally, personally, or you can go have a conversation where you can talk with someone, have your needs met, have their needs met. So there are choices no matter the circumstances you're in. And that these are realizations that, oddly and strangely, I didn't put these together until later in life.
Yeah, it's our lives. We can do what we want to, really, as long as we're not hurting other
That's
people.
Right.
And,
That's
you
right.
know, and I think that we have to realize that, you know, we can make whatever choice we want to make. And as long as it's safe and no one
yeah,
else is
yeah.
getting hurt. And,
yeah. I talk about in the book, life design, and that might feel a little sparkly, a little too sparkly or something, but it really is about designing your life. And again, that can be just small internal changes or having conversations that help design your life in the way, or finding podcasts that help you have realizations, or books, or there's all kinds of ways to go and get support for making these choices.
Are you more thankful that your mom was at the preschool graduation, or that your husband did what he did, or your ex-husband?
I think it had to go how it went. I think it all happened in divine timing, for lack of a better word. I think she was in the right place at the right time. He maybe did what he needed to do at the right place at the right time. I think it happened how it needed to happen.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if she wasn't there, maybe it would have gone differently. If he didn't do what he did, maybe that would have gone differently. And maybe you would be in a different portion of your life.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to think like we're all like one decision away from
yes.
a totally different life.
Isn't it crazy? It's yeah.
What's the biggest difference between, like, I don't know, early relationship version of Kate with this particular person and the Kate now, like in the way that you operate?
That is a great question. I think I'm definitely a work in progress. I'm not sure if I'm over indexing. I'm being really too stringent on what I'm looking for. I mean, I'm divorced. I'm not in a relationship right now, but it's taken me a while to really reflect on what will work for me now, because I thought I knew what would work for me back then. And I still am unlearning some behaviors that I had learned from just growing up and all of those different things and societal expectations. But it's really being true to what will make me feel good. And I keep going back to the word peace, like what even friendships, what relationship am I going to go into? There's mutual respect, mutual kindness, there's a feeling of peace and ease, and if value is aligned, all those different things. So I'm much more thoughtful these days on any level with any kind of interaction that I have, and that I want to feel good about the relationship and the dynamic.
It almost sounds like the older version of you, like the years ago version of you, was very much a people pleaser.
Yes.
And like sacrifice yourself for others
yeah.
in a way that, you know, would make, in turn, kind of makes you look good, like this, you know, in that way. But also like you were doing things that you didn't really want to do because other people needed that from you. And now it's like, maybe I'll do that once in a while, but it does need to serve me in a way that is harmonious with how I'm feeling and the things around me.
Yeah. So I think what I learned as I get older, I've talked a little bit about this, but it's like, what decisions make me feel good? What relationships make me feel good? What type of interactions make me feel good? So I'm trying to, and of course there's hard things we have to do and all that, but really trying to, life. We never know what's coming next. I've had a bizarre 2023, all kinds of curveballs, unexpected. But yeah, just trying to reset back to that. It's like, okay, you're angry or that happened or you feel wronged. Okay, let's try to reset and get back to that place that feels better. So it's a lot of intentional work. It's intentional. I'll leave it at that. It's intentional work.
Why did you write your book?
I wrote my book. When I initially started writing the book, it was about the relationship. And when I started writing the book, I started writing it years ago. It was, I had more of a victim hat on. I'll be honest with you, a little bit more of a victim hat. I really thought I could be writing a cautionary tale for women on the kinds of things that they should avoid, the kinds of things that they should look out for, the kind of red flags. And as I continued writing and got probably more professional advice, it then was, okay, the story is important, but what are the lessons? So I really began to anchor to the stories help tell the important parts, but then the lessons are even more important on what I can share based on my experience to give someone an aha moment or an insight or a reflection, some things that I wish I would have known about or heard about or talked about back when I was going through some of these things. So I'm hoping that the book is a tool for reflection and empowerment. So I wrote the book to inspire at the end of the day. I wrote the book to hopefully get a reaction, and I have, from women saying, wow, these are things I haven't thought about in a long time, or I'm having reflections that I haven't had in a long time, or this is making me think differently about something, or this is a book that I want to give my daughter so she can read it as she gets into early parts of her life. So those, it's surreal, some of the feedback, because when you're writing the book, you're just in it. And to actually have an impact, it's insane.
Do you feel that writing it helped you more than you expected it to? Because it sounds like, you know, like you had different versions of it. And
well, it's interesting because I don't know that writing the writing part was cathartic. I almost felt like, and I can't even describe it. I've been giving more thought to this. There was like an impetus. There was something driving me to keep going. I don't know if it's like, you know, my inner being, maybe like something on a very, very deeper level, like just keep going. Something a little deeper, spiritual might be too strong of a word, but there was something, it's like, okay, I'll keep going. So kept writing, kept doing the thing. And it really wasn't until I actually had to move in 2023, which was unexpected. So I had to go through the garage and this closet and that storage bucket, and found all of my journals from, you know, probably a couple of decades of journals talking about this thing and complaining about that thing and the to-do list for that thing. And as I was moving and I was coming down the home stretch of writing the book, I thought, you know, I've captured what I wanted to capture in the book as far as maybe historical perspective or my story capturing, documenting. So I ended up talking about it in the book. I'm giving away all the cliff notes on the book, but talk about in the book, I threw every single journal out, everything, any kind of note, any kind of list, any kind of anything, I threw it all out because I also had the feeling, you don't need this anymore. You've been through it. You've done it. You've lived it. You've captured it. You've written a book. Like I felt like releasing the journals was releasing a stagnant energy. And I know people like Oprah keep their journals for decades and decades and decades as historical artifacts. And I measured that. I weighed that when I was looking at these gigantic stacks of journals. Like, am I supposed to save journals? Like, am I a bad person because I throw journals in the trash? It feels weird. It feels like I shouldn't be doing it. But when I browsed through most every journal to see, it just felt like, you know what, now's the time to lighten. And it did feel. So I think it wasn't until I threw the journals, I had captured everything in the book that I wanted to capture, threw away the journals. I'm like, okay, now I feel
peace.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that they serve their purpose. They, you know, those journals, they did what they needed to at the time, right?
I think
so. You were able to get those things out, and that was your choice to toss them. And I think that's wonderful and you should be celebrated for that. I don't think there should be any kind of thought beyond that. I think it's important that we do the things that feel right. And it sounds like that's kind of the space you're in these days is, you know, choosing the things that are best aligned with
yes.
how you're feeling and yes. the peace that you're looking for. Yeah, I think it's wonderful. I was curious about the, you know, as far as like some people write their book with, you know, and there's a lot of personal components in it, and it is really cathartic. And I find writing to be that way for me. I find it looks much worse when it's, I mean, it looks much worse in my head than it does on the paper.
Yes, yes.
And you're like, okay, I can deal with that. I can handle that. Up here, it feels like everything's going out of control.
Yeah.
So I was curious. It's interesting that though the release really came after the fact almost.
I know. Isn't that strange?
Kind of when the book,
yes. Yeah. I never would have guessed it, but
was it weird when it went out into the world though?
Yes.
Was there yes. peace there?
No, no, no.
But now that it's out.
Yes. And the way that my experience worked is we had pre-readers for the book. So I had to choose a handful of pre-readers. And that was a very, very nerve-wracking point of this group of people is going to see this book. And I felt like it was going to be, I really didn't even know what type of response or reaction I would get from the book. I didn't even know. I couldn't even wrap my mind around it. So the thing goes out to the pre-readers. And I really expected just complete silence. Like they would take 2 weeks to read it and they'd maybe write what they thought about it. And I just didn't know. And instead, I started getting texts from people that I knew who were reading the book saying, oh my God, like, I can't, this is really good. I'm like, what? Like, are you serious? Like, I just didn't even know what to say. So it was very surreal. And October 24th was the release date. And it's like, okay, like no turning. And I knew there was no turning back. And I knew that, but it was very scary. To especially, I call it a candid conversation. I share, and you and I have had a candid conversation. I share a lot of personal stories, and I can only share these stories in hopes of serving women or serving communities, serving people who might benefit from the story. So I kept anchoring back to that, like it's okay, like it's okay. We're helping people, so really trying to stay focused on that. Like this serves a bigger purpose. And maybe it serves a bigger purpose than I even know right now. So we'll see.
I'm sure. Well, and you also mentioned that you're not like a turn on a dime kind of person too. So maybe 6 months from now, you're going to look back and go, wow, this has healed me in different ways that I didn't expect as well.
That's a great way. I love that. I'm going to write that down.
I think it's super inspiring when people put real, honest thoughts out into the world. Especially now, because so many of us were conditioned to hide those, keep those behind closed doors. Don't tell people when you're feeling a certain way. You can be happy, you can be mad, you can't be anything else, you know? And so I admire you for putting that out into the world. You will inevitably help someone, more than someone. But you know, what I'm saying is that there will be people that will resonate with it. Just as when hearing this episode now, something you said is going to hit someone at the right moment in time, just like that confluence of events at your son's preschool graduation day. Everything happened at the right time for you to kind of move forward into this space. So I love to kind of wrap up these conversations with a question. And I'm wondering if like this version of Kate could go back to Kate, who's like day before your son's preschool graduation, getting everything together, making sure this idyllic day is going to come together. Is there anything that this more peaceful version of Kate could whisper in her ear or let her know?
I mean, this sounds maybe a little corny or cheesy, but honestly, it's like the best is yet to come.
Do you think she would have believed you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because it was just like, I'm just living day to day.
It was way too hard. It did not feel like, and that was part of the decision-making process too. Like I need to make these decisions and the best will not come. The worst will come. So yeah, I think whispering, it's like, no, the best is yet to come.
Just wait.
Yeah.
Just wait. Yeah. Because if we go back to the beginning of this episode where you're describing who you are now and the things that you do now and how you feel about everything that's existing in your world now, there was such lightness. And when you talk about the experiences and the what you went through around that time period of that moment, there was not that light.
No.
Like as you were telling those stories, the light, even when you're telling it now.
I can feel it. I can feel it. And I know part of this talking about the book, I do have to go back in time And these are heavy. They're heavy stories. They're heavy stories. So thank goodness
I
was able to get through it. But yeah, it's heavy. And I'm again, hope I can be in service to others going through something similar, and they can realize the best is yet to come.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I just to relate to that feeling of like going back, I think my mom would go crazy if she knew that like every week I was telling people that she died. You know, like I feel like telling the world of how broken I was when she died and how it took me 20 years to like grieve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
but these are the important things because it's not an easy process. Grieving a relationship, grieving a dead person, you know, like these things are not easy. And the more we talk about it, the less people will feel alone in their circumstances and
understand
exactly that
it. That's exactly
something
it.
Out there,
yes, you know? Yes. And we know these days social media looks so shiny and people sharing their accomplishments. And sometimes I just have to turn it off. I was like, I just can't.
Well, and to that point, I share all the bad things too. I share when I fail, when I break things, when I'm not feeling my greatest, because I think it's important that people know that they're not alone, because I know other people are feeling the same
yes,
way.
Yes, yes. So. And isn't it fascinating that sometimes on social media, it's those honest shares that get the most views or the most likes, people being authentic and being real and being sad or upset or frustrated that people sharing.
I get tons of messages behind the scenes of like, thank you for sharing that. I feel the same today.
Yes, yes.
You know, and I just needed to know that. So
yes, we're not in it alone.
We are not. And that's why we have these conversations. I think it's super important. And thank you for taking the time today. If there are people that want to check out your book or get in your orbit, what's the best way to like find you in the space that you want them to find you in?
Yes. Yes. Thank you for asking. Okay. The book is out in the world. It's called A Candid Conversation, Lessons in Life, Love, Leadership. I'm the author, Kate Walker. So if you want to check out the book, I would love that. Come be part of my community by way of the book. My website, katewalker.com. If you want to know how to potentially work with me, you can find me there. I am on the socials, Instagram at the Kate Walker. I'm on LinkedIn, Kate Walker, SPHR. And if you do come and find me, let me know where you found me. Did you find me by way of Matt's podcast here? You know, let me know. People come in and I don't know where you found me. So let me know. Where did you find me? And let's be friends.
Awesome. And we will include all those links in the show notes so people can link out to that. And I will certainly now connect with you now that I can learn
Yay!
More about you now that we've had this conversation. So thank you for just being a part of this and just being a part of whatever we're creating here with the Life Shift podcast.
Yes. Thank you so much, Matt. I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate your thoughtfulness with your questions. So it has been such a pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you so much. If you are listening and you're enjoying this episode or something that Kate said really stuck out with you and you think someone in your circle needs to hear it, please do me a favor, do us a favor and share this episode with them and hopefully they can feel a little less alone. So thanks again, Kate, and I'll be back next week with a brand new episode. For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.